A new report has been published showing the increasingly widening gap between rich and poor in Irish society. The policy briefing document was released by Social Justice Ireland. The findings show that the disposable income of less well-off households fell by over 18% in a single year, while the income of the most well-off rose by more than 4%. Lydia O'Kane spoke to the director of Social Justice Ireland, Father Sean O'Leary.
A government makes choices all the time, particularly in its annual budget, where it basically outlines and sets out its choices in terms of making how it's going to distribute the income that's available, making decisions that impact on everybody's income in the following year. Now, what we've been looking at is the best data that's available in Ireland, which is done by the Central Statistics Office, and we have reanalyzed some of the material they have available, most up-to-date data. And what we found was that in a single year, the income of the poorest households fell by more than 18%. Now, we're talking disposable income here. This is income after taxes have been paid, after welfare payments have been received, but before any bills have been paid. So the money people get into their pocket before they actually use it. That's what we're talking about, disposable income. The income of the poorest households fell by more than 18% in a single year. And in that same year, for which figures are available, the richest households saw their income rise by 4%. Now, in this situation, we're comparing the decile shares. That's 10% of the households at the bottom and each 10% up the line until we get to the top 10%. So the bottom 10% of households saw their income fall by 18%, their disposable income, at the same time as the top decile saw their income rise by 4%. So we obviously have a problem in this, and that there is something we feel profoundly wrong with government decisions that produce this kind of lopsided distribution of income, which favours the richest. And they're doing this at the very time when Ireland's poor and middle-income people are absolutely struggling to make ends meet in very, very difficult times, because Ireland has been in a bailout programme, as your listeners will know well, and it is very, very stringent, and government is reducing expenditure every year and increasing taxes, and it's a very, very difficult situation. But the choices they're making are not protecting vulnerable people, not protecting low-income people. In fact, what we are seeing is that proportionately the poorest are taking the biggest hit, while the smallest hit is being taken by the richest proportionately. And we think that there's something profoundly at odds with what people would want in that situation. It's profoundly at odds with the whole Catholic social thought tradition. It's profoundly at odds with almost any theory of justice that people would wish to expound.
Why go after the most vulnerable? Is there a rationale even behind it?
There seems to be a very dubious rationale behind the Irish government's position, a rationale that doesn't actually stand up and is not supported by any evidence. But it is this, that if we were to tax people at high incomes, that they would leave Ireland. But in actual fact, I think people who are in Ireland are here because they want to be here for one reason or another. And if they're foreign businesses, they want to be here because we have an English-speaking country that was an educated labour force available, and they want to have a base in the European Union, for example. So if they were to go somewhere else, they would find higher tax rates than they do here. There's a few things that would be of interest to you, maybe, or to your listeners. If you look at the middle-income people in Ireland, their marginal tax rate is 41%. On top of that, they pay universal social charge and social insurance payment, which takes their contribution over 50% of their marginal income. Now, that is balanced out by, at the bottom, they get a tax credit. So for the first several thousand euro, they pay no tax at all. And then after that, they pay 20% for a relatively narrow band. But after that, then, they're into the top bracket if they're in the private sector. Now, that's where the vast majority of people would be, and that's the marginal. Over 50% is of the marginal income is what they're actually paying in tax. Now, you look at Ireland and its impact. We take everybody over 500,000 of an income, 500,000 euro. And there isn't a single person over 500,000 euro in Ireland who pays more than 25% on tax. Three quarters of the people with an income over half a million euro pay less than 20% of that in tax. So to us, it seems profoundly wrong that people of, with the very high, those very high levels of income, by any standards, high levels of income, wind up paying such a lower proportion of their income on tax than middle to low income people. And not only that, but these are the people that are better off or in a much better position to take a hit at a time of serious retrenchment, when we have to get to a point in which we acknowledge has to be done, in which government has to sort of reduce its borrowing dramatically. Now, it isn't as if there are no choices out there, because our organisation, Social Justice Ireland, every year produces a fully costed budget in advance of the government producing one. And we do this several months in advance. We do it. We will do it this year in September, and the government will publish its budget in December, and we will present it to government and anybody else who's interested in having a look at it. And what we do there is we set out a set of choices and make choices. We recommend, we make proposals that will produce exactly the same bottom line outcome that government seeks, which is to reduce its borrowing. And that's what is required to do in the bailout agreement, in the memorandum of understanding that underpins that bailout agreement, and that the IMF and the European Central Bank and the European Commission insist must be carried, must be achieved. That borrowing must be come down by this year, $3.5 billion. But we will make different choices in our proposals, and those choices will protect the vulnerable. Now, there's no sort of play acting with this or pretense, because we use costings provided by the government or by reputable agencies that the government itself would accept. There's no, and everything that we propose is fully costed, and the source of the costing is there. So what I'm saying in that context is government does have choices, but government is so focused possibly on other things or whatever that it is paying absolutely no attention to the real damage being caused to ordinary people by the policies that it actually has put in place.
It's interesting what you said there regarding the government fear that the people with more money, their thought process is that they would be more likely to leave. That's interesting you should say that, when you think about the amount of people leaving from airports in Ireland who can't even get a job and have to go abroad in order to get a job. There seems to be more of those than there are rich people wanting to leave.
Well, far more. And it's interesting, if you look at the government's own figures for 2012, the government's own figures say that there will be fewer people with jobs in Ireland at the end of 2012 than there were at the beginning. But they also say that there will be fewer people unemployed in Ireland at the end of the year than there were at the beginning. Now, the only way that you can reduce the number of jobs and at the same time reduce the numbers unemployed is by having people emigrate. And that's what's actually happening. And this is not a viable policy for a government to be supporting, the idea that in some way or other we can get our problem solved by people emigrating. I mean, that's a nonsensical approach. What we need, there's a number of things we need, but government needs to sort of focus on, for example, reversing the ratio it is currently applying to cuts in public expenditure compared to tax increases. What we're talking about here is, at the moment, for every €2 in cuts, they add €1 in tax increase. But actually, that's the wrong ratio. We say it should be the other way around. And €2 of a tax increase for every €1 in cuts. And the reason we say that is that Ireland has one of the lowest total tax takes in the Western world. There are only two countries in the European Union out of 27 that have a lower percentage of GDP in tax. Now, we're not talking about income tax alone. We're talking about every source of taxation, including local charges and a variety of other kinds of social insurance payments by employers and workers and so on. You put it all together, and what you find is that Ireland has one of the lowest tax takes in the Western world. Yet, in many ways, the government has been constantly focusing on keeping it down. Now, our view would be that you don't have to raise income tax rates even to increase the tax take, the overall tax take. What we need to do is eliminate huge amounts of tax breaks that are in the system that benefit only the better off. And the previous government established an independent commission on taxation, which reported 3 years ago, and they identified something very substantial, tens of billions in tax break, and that were there. Now, since then, government has made some progress in reducing those, but there's still an awfully long way to go. And all we would say is that there needs to be some kind of increase in that to sort of move Ireland in the right direction. We also need an investment package to create jobs, an investment package that is funded by the partly by the European Investment Bank, partly by our own reserves here that we still have, partly by private investment. It's doable. We've published proposals on how it can be done, and we would be thinking of a substantial investment, maybe 15 billion over 4 years, that kind of number. Now, what that would do is it would create jobs. Those jobs would reduce the numbers on welfare and therefore reduce the welfare bills, but they would also increase the tax take of the government, and they would also increase the consumer spending in the country, because people on those incomes will spend the money in the country, so you improve domestic demand. But in actual fact, Ireland, Irish government has been reducing this, the size of the Irish economy, and every year. And what's happening is that the Irish government is in the process of taking away, over a period of 7-8 years, from 2008 to 2014, is taking away about 30% of the 20% of the total economy is being taken out, shut down, in effect. We're taking from a situation of maybe 160 billion of a GDP, the government is taking out 32 billion over that period, and that's part of the bailout agreement. And we have basically said that there is no example in economic history of this kind of approach actually working. There is no economic theory that supports it in any serious way, and that putting it in place is basically a manifestation of what we would call voodoo economics. There is not, and there are several Nobel Prize winners in economics who have criticized this, several of them. This whole focus, which actually is contagious around Europe at the moment, the European Union in particular, of austerity, austerity, austerity. You cannot generate growth while cutting, where the net difference is cutting. That doesn't mean that you don't reform your public service. Of course you do. You obviously have to eliminate waste and so on. But you cannot expect job increases in a reality where you're constantly cutting your expenditure in that area, that whether that's public expenditure or private expenditure or the consumer themselves, the citizen themselves actually spending money. Ireland is reducing all three at the moment, and has been since 2008, and is programmed to continue doing that at least till 2014, if not beyond. The economic recipe is nonsensical. Okay, you might ask me, where do we go from there? How do we solve it? The solution is relatively straightforward. We have to get ourselves into a situation where we don't have to carry the level of debt we're carrying. What we're doing at the moment is carrying all the debt for all the gambling that was done by bankers from Germany and France and a lot of other places, who gambled large amounts of money and bought very stupidly bonds from banks that were, in fact, not really banks at all. They collapsed. And what's happened is the Irish government has been forced to take aboard all that debt. And Ireland's poor and middle-income people, many of whom had nothing at all to do with this, no hand act or part in it, are now paying back those debts. And they're paying them back in two ways. They're paying them back in increased taxation, and they're paying them back in cuts in their services. I would say that's a profoundly immoral situation. And I think there needs to be a refocusing of this. I find it very interesting to hear the Chancellor, Angela Merkel, holding forth at great length on what's required and how we must tighten our belts and so on. But it was her banks that were saved by the Irish citizen, poor and middle-income people. Her banks gambled recklessly in Ireland and lost their bets. And yet they have forced the Irish government to adopt those total adoption of those debts. And I don't think Ireland will actually get out of its current problem until that issue is dealt with.
Ireland has been in this problem for quite a while now, and I just wanted to ask you regarding just the man on the street, the middle and lower income. Are people still looking to organisations like St Vincent de Paul for help? How bad are people suffering? How and continuing to suffering, or are things slightly getting better for them?
In fact, they're getting worse. There's huge additional demand in organisations such as St Vincent de Paul. We're looking at food distribution systems being put into place now that were used to be small. You know, they would have 50 or 100 people possibly over a week or over a few days coming, and they're now actually feeding thousands of people every week and giving them food for free, and sending them off with food packs so that to try and carry them over, food they can store for a few days or a week, trying to help people to carry over. There is extraordinary pressure on people who are low to middle income. People who are better off haven't been squeezed much at all. If you were to come to Dublin and to go around parts of the city, you would not believe we had a recession. You would go into restaurants and people are spending very high money buying meals or coffees or, you know, cafes and stuff. Or if you went into some of the bars, you'd see people buying spirits and various cocktails of different types and so on. And you would believe there was a recession in Ireland. But then in other parts of the city, there is total depression, huge levels of unemployment, no money available for distribution, people living with incomes below the poverty line, services being reduced year by year, and they were not great in the first place. And slowly but surely, the erosion of hope for those people. There's an extremely deep anger in large numbers of the population, in a large proportion of the population. They expressed that anger in the last general election by absolutely decimating the government that had been in place. They lost more than three quarters of their seats in the general election. Okay? Now they put in a government with the biggest majority in the history of the state. But that government has basically continued the same policies as the previous government, with some cosmetic changes here and there, but nothing dramatic. And certainly the same. In fact, the current government is even more hitting the poorest even harder, in the sense that the distribution impact of their budget overall is very regressive compared to even the previous few years of the last government. So you have a very, very difficult situation. And certainly hope is in short supply in Ireland at the moment, and needless to say, you know, what was it Chesterton said about the Irish, the race that God made mad, for all their wars were merry and all their songs were sad. But in actual fact, like, you wouldn't judge it by the outside that you might see sometimes if you came to Dublin right now, but there's a huge amount of problems in the place, and people suffering enormously, side by side with people who are doing very well. And that's what our report has actually shown, that the richest have been growing in their wealth, while the poorest have actually taken a hit in a single year of 18%. So you can imagine the impact of that. Poverty is growing in Ireland, yet government policy has been increasing the income of the richest 10% of households, and widening the gap between them and everybody else in society. And I suppose if we would see in Social Justice Ireland, we would say that in difficult times, it's imperative that the policy decisions taken by government, that they are fair and just, and that they are seen to be fair and just. It's not good enough for government to assert we are putting everything we do is done on the basis of fairness. Well, we basically will look at the evidence, not at what people say. We're not too pushed about the rhetoric, because it may not be followed through. We look at the evidence, and the evidence shows quite clearly that the decisions taken are not fair or just. They've obviously benefited the rich at the expense of the poor. I can think of little that would be as clear in terms of analysing what's good and bad or what's right and wrong. When we met, just one final point, maybe when we met the Troika, we've met the Troika half a dozen times. That's the IMF and the European Central Bank and the European Commission half a dozen times in the last 18 months, our organisation, Social Justice Ireland. And in each case, we've talked to them. But very interesting, when we originally presented this analysis and presented the evidence to the Troika principals, as they call them, the people who lead the various delegations, the person who chairs it, leads it, is AJ Chopra from the IMF in Washington, and he said his summary at the end was he found our presentation extremely educational and extremely sobering. And I think that's the actual reaction that a lot of people have when they see the evidence. And we would simply say it's critical to look at the evidence, because that shows us what's actually really happening as against what people would like to happen or what people claim they're actually making happen.